So welcome to a special edition of the TEEP podcast. We're here today with Professor Omar Abdelrahman, professor here at the University of Houston in the Chemical Engineering Department. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Let's start by, why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. So I'm an associate professor of chemical and biomolecular engineering. I grew up in the Middle East in Dubai. Studied chemical engineering as an undergraduate student, very similar to Houston. The petrochemical industry there is huge, so that was always a major attraction. Realized I like teaching, realized I also like research. I looked to my professors at the time and I said, how do I do this as a career? How do I get a combination of teaching and research? And they said, you got to go get a PhD and become a professor.
Absolutely.
Best place to do that still is the United States. So I applied to grad school, and after many rejections, I landed on upstate New York, Syracuse.
Okay.
Polar opposite of the weather here.
No kidding. That is polar opposite up there.
So you get about 160 inches of snow on average per season there, but it's a great place to visit, great place to live. And I got my start there with my advisor, Jesse Bond, who at the time was advancing the science of biomass catalytic upgrading. The idea of, can we design solid catalysts that let us transform plant material into chemical feedstock that we currently know how to use in the petrochemical industry? Finished up my PhD there, decided I still liked research and teaching, still wanted to become a professor. Went on to the University of Minnesota to do a postdoc there with Paul Downhauer.
Okay.
Continuing in the area of biomass catalysis, but then started to open up to new ideas. And in 2018, I got my start as an assistant professor at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. And then in January of 2024, happily moved here to Houston. Now here with you all.
Okay. Yes. I remember your arrival, and you're getting your lab set up here, and you deal a lot with electrochemistry.
I do. My lab is split about into three parts. There's thermal catalysis, which is I have a solid catalyst. I drive reactions with thermal energy. But there's a lot of interest in the ability to use electrons directly in a catalytic reaction. That's the idea of electrochemistry or electrocatalysis. Yeah. Lots of overlap with thermocatalysis. And more recently, we've been even getting into photochemistry. Less in the traditional idea of using a material like titanium dioxide, but instead, can you use photons in the visible light range to directly interact with metal nanoparticles and control the binding of key intermediates?
I've seen a little bit of work on that, and that's fascinating. That could be the next era that we end up talking about in maybe in 5 or 10 years from now.
We've got a lot of sunlight in Houston, is what I'll say.
that is true. Right now, I think it's a little bit easier to turn those photons into electrons.
Right now.
Talking about electrons, electrochemistry, there seems to be a lot of good work happening with that. It ties in with the idea, I won't say necessarily electrification, but it's part of the getting more versatile, having options in chemistry of maybe you've got some cheap electrons around and you can use that. Can you give me some examples of what you're doing in your lab in electrochemistry? I think I know some of them.
You're raising a great point. Electrons are very versatile. When we say electrification in the context of the chemical industry or chemical production, that can take a lot of meanings.
Yes.
One of them is I turn those electrons into heat and I still drive a thermal reaction. And there are many, many good reasons to do that. And you can see work of people like Professor Harold in our department that does that. Yep. In my lab, what we specifically do is not to convert the electrons into thermal energy, but to use them directly at the molecular scale to, let's say, combine an electron with a proton in solution. You make a hydrogen atom. And that hydrogen atom is extremely useful now to add into other chemical bonds and perform chemical transformations.
It sounds like a much more efficient way of doing things, but a lot more difficult.
It is. It has the potential to be more efficient because I see it as kind of going to Costco. You cut out the middleman. So instead of having to convert electrons into phonons or thermal energy and then performing the reaction, you're chopping out the phonon as the middleman and using electrons directly.
Wow.
The challenge is when you want to perform more complex chemical conversions, as we typically like to do, you require multiple electrons to turn, let's say, carbon dioxide into ethanol or ethylene, as many people would like to do.
Yep.
You're talking about 10 plus electron transfers per molecule.
And they all go right, don't they? Just one to one?
They do absolutely the opposite, unfortunately. I think of it like rolling the dice. Every time you're going to transfer an electron, you have a question of selectivity. Will that electron proceed in the pathway you would like it to go? Or will it take literally any other direction that's available to it? And so it's a probabilistic problem. And one of the approaches that has been taken in the field is to design materials that sort of put their thumb on the scale in terms of driving the electron in the direction you'd like it to go.
Well, that's what catalysis is all about. You get that intermediate compound, that intermediate species that helps direct you to the right chemical at the right time.
That's right. Catalysis is all about shaping that energetic landscape to drive the reactions, and in this case, to drive the electron transfers in the direction that you would like them to go.
Fantastic. So I think we shared with you earlier, in fact, Carla found this great article with the conversion of CO2 to CO. Fairly straightforward. What did you think of that article? You think they've got something real here?
I think they've got something interesting. So the paper that Carla found and shared is interesting in my mind for multiple reasons. There's what we academics do on a bench scale, and it can be cool. It's molecularly interesting. What I think is different about this paper is on top of it being interesting from the perspective of the material that they designed and the science at the molecular level that they've discovered, it's also interesting because it addresses some of the challenges that exist at the lens scale beyond a bench. We have to worry about when we design these new technologies at the academic level, do they address the issues that will exist at the lens scales of meters or entire processes and facilities? That gets into the issue of techno-economics, the merger of technical know-how and profitability. The way I like to think about it is when I was an undergraduate, a professor told me you can make a process as green as you would like it to make. If it doesn't make money, nobody's going to build it. And there's good reason for that.
I have to agree with that.
There's good reason for that. There's risk associated with developing a new process. There has to be reward for taking on that risk. So here, what I think is interesting about it, when techno-economic analyses has been performed in the context of, let's say, electrochemistry or electrocatalytic conversions, one of the few product groups that emerge as economically viable is transforming carbon dioxide into carbon monoxide. Carbon monoxide can be a poison in the sense of a catalytic converter in the back of your car, but to the petrochemical industry, that's one half of syngas, and you can virtually make any chemical you'd like once you have syngas.
So we're talking about carbon monoxide. You're absolutely right. There's so much different chemistry that can be done from carbon monoxide in the first place. It goes back almost 100 years. In fact, in my previous life, I supplied some catalyst for various different chemistries going that way. So tell us, where do you think the future is? What great breakthroughs do you think are going to come through? What might surprise us in the next few years coming out of the labs, whether it's in your lab or someone you're watching these days?
Great question. I'm a big proponent of looking backwards to history to figure out where we're going.
Okay.
And early 20th century, we have the rise of petroleum and petrochemicals. And the way I look at it is that industry has had a century to optimize. They've had done a fantastic job with that. When you look at a modern petrochemical plant, they are extremely energy efficient. I think new emerging technologies like electrocatalytic conversions, electrifications, are all headed in that direction with enough time and resources and addressing the appropriate questions at the different lens scales, we can get there. I think there's great opportunity in an unintended consequence of the electrification of vehicles. So if you think about it, where does the majority of our precious metals go today other than jewelry? Let's say with platinum and gold, a lot of that goes into the back of your car.
Absolutely.
That's why we see those articles about people stealing catalytic converters. But that's changing. That landscape is changing. And there is a new opportunity to say catalyst materials that we have avoided because they are expensive may within the next decade or two not be as expensive or rare anymore. And we can reconsider what catalytic conversions are economically feasible once again with these metals like platinum, palladium, rhodium, and so on. Other approaches, biasly, in my opinion, in my lab, what we focus on a lot is what we call programmable catalysis. The idea is everything we think about when designing a catalyst, typically, everything we teach on the undergraduate level tends to be at steady state. There is a lot of benefit to transient operation. There are conditions where you can oscillate a process, or in the context of my lab's research, we oscillate the energy of the catalytic surface directly. One of the ways with photochemical energy, or one of the ways with electrochemical energy. And we oscillate the energy of the surface to constantly keep it in a transient state. And that can afford you much higher rates of reaction, even allow you to temporally tune the selectivity of your catalytic conversion. So I'm personally excited about that as well.
So I've seen some very interesting work with varying the concentration of the reactants on the feed. As you said, so with these non-steady state, you change the concentration of the feed, you're going to change the surface concentrations, and you can achieve a higher rate that way. But you're talking about something a little bit differently, because you cannot thermally change a catalyst very quickly. It takes time to heat things up and cool things down. But using electrons, using electrochemistry or light, you can go at a much higher frequency that way. That sounds really exciting.
That's right. And you're hitting the nail on the head. We've certainly considered as a community oscillations in the form of concentration, temperature, pressure in the past. This goes all the way back to research in the 70s and the 80s. The difference is, in the language of process control, is how dampened those fluctuations will be. If I have to implement an oscillation of concentration, by the time it reaches the catalyst surface, due to the mixing characteristics of the volume of my reactor.
Those are slow oscillations. To even talk about every second is...
It's like the suspension on your car. You hit a bump, it's going to dampen that fluctuation.
Exactly.
But if I can deliver the electrons directly to the surface and oscillate them, I can do that reversibly, and I can do that with frequencies of kilohertz.
Yes.
The same is true for light. We shine a fiber optic at a catalyst surface, and we flicker the light as relatively quick. So I think there's new frontiers in terms of reversible energetic oscillations that allow you to hold a catalyst surface in a pseudo-steady state, a constantly transient state, and achieve those time average rates of reaction that beat out whatever you can do at steady state without having to redesign our existing catalysts and infrastructure.
Wow, that sounds exciting. I'm really looking forward to that. I'm going to be watching the literature, and we will keep in touch, and you can
absolutely
let me know what to be looking for. So thank you very much for being on this episode, and we will have another episode dropping within 2 weeks. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for having me.